All right. So Matthew chapter 16, we are building up really to this big question at the end of chapter 16, because as we focus in on what it means to be a disciple of Christ, what it means to really follow him, the question that we're probably asking ourselves is Christ really worth the cost? And this morning, we're going to get into chapter 17. We're going to find out very quickly that he is. And if there is one thing, you know, if there's one thing I want you to leave with this morning, is as we sit and study and really think about the glory of Jesus that's going to be revealed in this passage that we're going to study this morning, that should change some things for us. That should change our faith. That should change the way that we think about Christ. That should really change our obligations. Not in the sense that we just get to dismiss all our earthly obligations, but ultimately it shifts our priorities. I also hope that it'll change the way that we think about fear. Not just in mere terror, but the things that we show reverence towards and who we show reverence towards. Because ultimately, as we get through these chapters this morning, I think we'll walk out of here having a better appreciation for the changes that we need to make in our lives. I certainly need to make a lot. I hope that if there's any way I can encourage you to do the same, we'll be able to do that as we continue in with our lesson. Matthew chapter 16, verses 24 through 28. If anyone wants to follow after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life because of me will find it. For what will it benefit someone if he gains the whole world, yet loses his soul? Or what will anyone give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come with the angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will reward each person according to what he has done. Jesus mentions three things that are must. These are not shoulds, must, in order to be a disciple of his. What are those three things? Follow. Okay. All right. Now, I did, have some time last week to really rush through these three things, but I know that you guys hopefully have thought about those things last week as we kind of went through them pretty quickly, but also just thinking about in terms of hopefully our study and familiarity with these three things as well. One of the questions I just wanted to ask and get your perspective on this morning, all three of these are challenging, no denying that. Which of these three might be or might prove to be maybe a little bit more challenging than others? Okay. Deny. Anyone else? See a lot of head shaking. Yes. Why is that? Self? Okay. All right. Our culture doesn't have anything to do with that, right? Our self-will, our pride, it's not easy. And I wouldn't say that in a lot of ways, it's necessarily the bad things that are causing us to be selfish. You know, when my feet hit the floor, and I'm sure when your feet hit the floor, each day when you wake up, the things that you're thinking about, the obligations that you have, all the competing priorities that life is throwing at you, all those things are not necessarily in themselves bad things. But when some of those priorities or some of those obligations start to replace where Christ really needs to be, and when I want to focus on all the things that Nate wants to focus on, or Andrew wants to focus on, or Nicole wants to focus on, then that's when things start to become a real problem, right? And so ultimately what Christ is calling us towards is to shift our focus, not from ourselves, but to God and to other people. To be willing to suffer. To be willing to go through hard painship and cost. That looks a little bit different for us maybe in 2026 than it did in the first century. But at the same time, I think the reality is that the suffering can still take place. And unfortunately, some folks even today have just as difficult of a road, and some have it a little bit easier. I don't understand all of that. But the reality is that we're called, each and every single one of us, to take up our cross, follow him. And then finally, following him, right? That's not just something that I do in a moment or on a particular day. It's something I do every day. And so the next thing that Jesus describes here is a question, right? He starts doing a little bit of counting. Hey, let's go evaluate for just a moment your soul, eternity, and what you're willing to give up in light of that. Go ahead, Andrew.
I was just going to say, first thing,
right?
It's just,
right.
It's, would maybe simplify it, just said. And too oftentimes I think we're sacrificing.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't hurt,
agreed.
In some sense, there has to be some pain. And I don't mean physical pain.
Yeah, right.
You have to be giving something for it to be a sacrifice.
Right.
It's good to be generous.
Yeah.
But if you're the gospel, you're just giving from your wealth, then it's really sacrificing
in that respect.
It's
absolutely.
That's great. I'm not saying don't do it by all means, but you can sacrifice.
Which
means if it's your time, in a way, things that you would have rather been, Christ calls you to do it.
Absolutely.
You know, that could play out differently, but critical in application.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, fantastic. Thanks for jumping in there. Well, that's interesting. Okay. I must have sent you a different
one. Literally had a whole nother slide. And I, it's just my version. Sorry about that.
The evaluation in 26 real.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
So he's not just asking a question.
This right. Yeah. Exactly. Go ahead.
Part of counting the cost.
Absolutely. Yeah. Agreed. And actually, no, it's right here. Go ahead, Rachel.
Yeah.
It's not just very.
Right.
Absolutely. Because you can see Christ and your followers right there.
Absolutely.
And the farther away you are.
Yeah, right. Yep. And I think for us, our perspective is going to be a little bit different towards these verses, and especially towards a question like this, because, I mean, we know what's at stake. We know the reality. Not everyone has that same understanding. We want them to get to that understanding. And even when we do have that understanding, what just happened? There we go. Okay. This is me just trying to use this today, because I can't keep the button going. But when you think about, you know, the cost and the exchange, right? Because Jesus is saying, hey, he's asking a question, and I think we all know the answer here to this, that you can't put a cost on your soul. But the reality is, if we're not careful, we could very well be making that exchange each and every single day and not realize it. So the question I had is, what are some of those subtle and common ways that we can be making that trade in our lives? And how do we guard against that? Go ahead, Andrew.
Well, I was gonna say, I don't know.
Okay, yeah.
For all of them, sell out, very little value.
Right.
Without any value at all, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And yet what God is saying is value, so much so.
Yeah, right.
So I think that's really how this plays out typically. Yeah. Maybe it's a thought to it, but the reality today, sell out our soul for things of very little value.
Yeah, exactly.
What God is trying to is that your soul, you should behave. And that's really
And if I ask you, because what are some of those things?
Sometimes it's, you know, me just wasting time.
Right.
What could I have done? And so to someone, that's pretty simple. But I think also too about the laundry, just what I'll do is sin. It's just making effect, selling myself out for something that has very little or very short. Yeah. Putting myself, I mean, in retrospect, sort of what God's trying to press upon us is having the forethought.
Right. So you use time as an example. Absolutely. Anybody else have any thoughts on other things, common things that can sneak into our lives where we might be making that exchange? Go ahead, Matt. I think for me here recently has been a lot of focus at work and trying to help the teams and just feeling like, you know, stuck behind a computer screen for so many hours a day. And quite honestly, some of that probably is just my own self-inflicted challenges with just being intentional, not having boundaries, not being okay to push back and say, no, that's not my job, that's yours. I can't do everything for you, and you can't do, like, you know, we all have a part to play. The other part of that, too, is just thinking about how we use our time in the week. I'm sure we like TV. I'm sure we like social media. I'm sure we like playing games on our phones, and I'm sure we like, maybe like console. I envision Shannon still playing that PS5 over there. But I sometimes wonder, I mean, if you, all of us, you know, if we take a step back and we think about how we used our time each week, did I spend more time watching television shows than I did reading my Bible, studying my Bible? Did I spend more time, you know, talking about things that, quite honestly, like, just stupid? Like, what's the point? Like, man, not a whole lot of substance or depth behind it. We're just, you know, like small talk, but like none of it is really actually building to help. How do I make Andrew become a better Christian? How do I help Trista and whatever challenge she's going through in life? How much time am I spending in prayer, right? And it's not to make any of us feel guilty. Reality is like there is a cost to following Christ. There is an exchange that we can make for our souls. And if there's one thing I've been focused on in 2026, I'm trying to figure out, like, these are the things that are most important. My job's important. My family's important. But, like, sometimes if we're not careful, you know, reruns of The Office start to become, like, more important than reruns of reading through the Gospel of Matthew. And I just say that because if we're honest with ourselves, like some of us probably are spending a lot more time on things that not necessarily inherently within them bad, but we could be using that time so much better, to Andrew's point, right? Let's get into Matthew chapter 17 for just a moment. Just a reader for the first eight verses. Whoever wants to read, go ahead, Andrew.
And after 6 days, Peter and James and John, his brother, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. He was transfigured, shone like light. Behold, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah, talking, Lord, it is good that we are. If you wish, I will make Elijah. Behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them. The cloud said, This is my beloved son, to whom I am well fitted him. The disciples heard this. They fell and were terrified and touched them. Rise and have no. With their eyes, they saw no.
All right. We're going to spend a little bit. Like the vast majority of the rest of the class here this morning, I'll cover a couple of other things in Matthew chapter 17, but this is where we're going to really kind of anchor in. Really easy to skip over that first part of after 6 days, all right? It gives us a little bit of a time boundary there, right? 6 days have transpired. What do you think those 6 days were like? Considering what just happened in chapter 16, where, you know, we have this great confession. Jesus says he's going to die. Peter, you know, his whole misconception of the Messiah is, what are you talking about? You can't die. You know, he gets rebuked because, you know, after all, the words that Peter gave are really ultimately the will of Satan. And Jesus says, get behind me. And then he talks about the cost of following Jesus. What do you think that week was like? You think all the things that these men have given up, all the things that they've left behind, all the things that they've been given their time towards and what they think and what they imagine and what they, you know, hope for is the reality, all of it turned on its head. So you think you're sleeping pretty easy? You think you might be thinking a lot about your choices right now? Easy to miss, I think, sometimes when we see after 6 days, and we rush through those. Can't imagine what that week, you know? And I don't, you know, perhaps you might say, well, Nate, that's speculative, but like, they're human beings like we are. And just think about how that might be for you. If you show up to work Monday morning and someone says, hey, you don't have a job anymore. Ha, great. I'm going to get full nights of sleep this week and I'm going to be just okay. Crazy. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Impressive.
Still there. Yeah. Right.
And I imagine on that.
Yep.
Between the last and now, you're still there.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Yeah, thanks for adding that too. Because even if they're questioning the things, even if they're having some challenges, there they are, still following, and hopefully see it through to figure out how this will play out. And that's how what we should be doing too. So yeah, great point. All right, so they go up on a mountain, don't know what mountain it is, don't really care what mountain it is, that's not the point. Now we're not so focused on geography here. And what happens on this mountain? All right, so Moses and Elijah appear. What else happens on this mountain? Oh man, Gerald. You know, they're so far removed from what they looked like, and they didn't have cameras back then, and I don't know if they painted. They just, yeah. Maybe there's some things there in that scene that we're not getting everything, we're getting what we need to know. But Gerald, yeah, your question is something I was thinking about too. It's just like, how do you just immediately write, oh, there's Moses and Elijah? Yeah, no, maybe so. Okay, all right.
Remember the visions of John as he saw things. He was revealed to thought by beyond.
Uh-huh.
He was knowing what doing and yeah. The ultimate cause of that. So
yeah, definitely. Go ahead, Nicole.
Because he talked. I kind of always thought because somehow, I mean, somebody passed that.
Right.
So yeah. I don't know.
No. Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. So Moses and Elijah are here. What else? What else is happening? Go ahead. Okay, yeah, yeah. Okay, right. So Jesus didn't just go change his clothes. Yeah, okay. What else is happening? What else do we see in this verse, these verses? Well, I mean, because this is pretty, it's awesome, right? And we can use that term in the right context there, and that'd be valid. So they are witnessing something awesome, and Peter's like, all right. Are there moments in our lives where, like, you know, not this awesome, but like there are some things that just happen right before our eyes, and like we don't even have the words to say, and so we just, like, one, we don't like the silence, so we just blurt out something kind of dumb. Maybe not a whole lot of that. Now, I'm not saying what Peter said is dumb. He's trying to show honor here. It's misplaced. But at the same time, you know, Peter's reaction is, I don't know what to do with this. And I think that's ultimately what Mark and Luke say. He blurts these things out because he doesn't understand. So he wants to set up three tents. Okay. What else? What else happens? God speaks. But a cloud appears. Yeah. Puffy white cloud. Cumulative. Right? No, it's a pretty significant cloud appears. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cloud.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, why is it that?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Thanks, Jen. No, Mount Sinai, the cloud that was over top of it, it was shine bright, but it was a cloud of fire as well. Like, this isn't just any common cloud here. This is a significant cloud.
The cloud separated the bright shining cloud always.
Right. No, I mean, they may have, they may not have. All I know is this event is pretty significant. I would hope to Jen's comment that they would recognize there's something different about this cloud and maybe would start this contrast of, God's presence is here among us. They hear a voice, to Andrew Brown's point. And, what does this voice say? All right. And then what else does it finish with? Listen to him. Okay. All right. So think about this for just a few moments this morning as we, consider the people that appeared. Significance of Moses. Why is Moses and Elijah in this scene?
Great media. Mm-hmm. Moses so much so that even the law that God gave.
Right. So, Moses is a significant mediator or the law of Moses. He was a huge historical figure. The Jewish law was the books that, were penned by Moses through the Holy Spirit. This is what they followed. So, certainly there's a significance there with him. What about Elijah, the prophet? Exactly. That is the central point, right? When you walk away from this entire event, and when you walk away from Matthew chapter 17 and this particular point of scripture, the overriding, most concise way to say any of this is that everything pointed to Christ, and I listen to him. I follow him. So when Christ says that he's going to die, here in just a few moments, you'll notice this time they're grieved, but they don't rebuttal. They listen. And, certainly there is so much value in going back and reading the Old Testament, the encouragement that we find in reading through the Old Testament. But ultimately, it all points to Christ. We listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other thing, too, here, we set up three tents. Reality is, Peter's well-intentioned. He these are significant people. These are good people. These are people that we honor. But ultimately, no. Like, they're not on the same playing field here. Christ is a little bit different. No, not just a little bit. He is significantly. When Moses came before God, his face, changed afterwards as a reflection. In this scene, the glory of God is shining through Christ. Christ is not falling down on his face. It is literally coming through him. There, he is God. And that is significant. And so, no, we're not going to set up three structures. No, Moses and Elijah are not equivalent with the Son of God. By all means, all the more glory, all the more authoritative peace there with Christ. And then, we need to listen to him. Ultimately, we see the reaction of the disciples, too. When they heard this voice, they see these events. Says they're terrified. Does that mean they were just completely overwhelmed with fear and afraid? Was it, respect? Was it all of it? What do you guys think?
Awe-stricken and feel prostrate.
Yeah. All right. Like, I can't imagine. But that's the reaction I would hope and all of us would have. Go ahead, Nicole.
All after God spoke.
Yeah.
Think of the allness of God focusing there.
Yeah.
Thought that was such a good statement.
No, it is. Yeah.
For that there.
Right. No.
Just the presence of God.
Paul. Yeah. Exactly.
I can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Well, and then think about what happens right afterwards. Right. Christ comes over to them, and what happens then? Touches them and tells them to get up. Don't be afraid. The Jewish people at Mount Sinai, they didn't want to come close to that mountain. And God certainly didn't necessarily come down and touch him. But in this moment, he has. You know, the presence of God is here and he wants to be with you. And there's a connection here now. And I want you to have confidence in me. I want you to trust me. I want you to get up and move forward. And you think about this passage, and when you think about who Jesus really is, obviously some things need to change. So if, you know, what is the difference between just simply knowing a little bit about who Jesus is, but then the gap between knowing and actually being really confronted by who he is? There's a difference. Any thoughts there?
When you start to live here versus just...
Definitely. You know, there are some things in life that happen to us, or we can even anticipate and see it coming. And we get so overwhelmed with that impeding deadline. We're not sure if we're going to make that deadline. Or, I don't know how this surgery is going to turn out. I don't know if I'm going to have enough money in my bank account after all these bills get paid. And how am I going to put food on the table? And those are valid things to be concerned about. And they're the realities. At the end of the day, is my dependence on myself or is my dependence on God? Yeah, I have obligations to do, but I'm going to keep praying. I'm going to keep putting my trust in him. I'm going to keep trying to move forward. I can't stay stuck. The reality is there's a lot of things that life throws at us that can, you know, cause us to be in fear and cause us to be afraid. And, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, I got to be able to put my trust in God and push past those things. Go ahead, Jamie.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Most are afraid of all. This is don't be afraid of raw power. Some respect and straight from God. They had to be afraid. You know, they had to go back to Moses on the mountain. They were afraid.
Yeah, have the faith and the confidence and knowing who Christ really is and who our God is. The glory that's, we don't fear him. We shouldn't, our condition, our desires, not to fear anything else that life has got us. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And that's the reality. Any other comments before we move on? Yeah, go ahead. There's a couple more. That's good.
It's also established, provided several evidence. It's telling you, but Christ for Pilate.
Yeah.
Divided, have him.
Yeah, that's up.
One other element, which is correction, to say it slightly, but the silliness.
Yeah, right.
The reaction, you said it. And I think one is like each story verse is just some piece of it. And there's a lesson in it for us and in how we react to God. We'll also see here in a little bit when we get to the story.
Yeah.
Where they're a miracle.
Yep.
Again, there's still some, maybe seeing the there's still.
Yeah, definitely. Agreed. And, you know, as they come down from the mountain and start to head back, certainly a question comes up about Elijah. And, hey, you know, the scribes say that Elijah needs to come. And, of course, Jesus' response to that is, well, he has. He did come. And what did they do with him? They killed him. Okay. And Jesus says, hey, the same thing's going to happen to me. It's all part of God's plan. And then we get to this passage about the demon-possessed boy. Matthew chapter 17, verses 14 through 21. Just kind of the interesting contrast and transition here. I feel like Matthew's very intentional about this, right? We go from this really incredible, awesome scene, and then we're right back down into failure. And, you know, the failure here is also something that Matthew continues to reemphasize in his gospel, right? Why couldn't these disciples cast out this? Why couldn't they do it? Because of their little faith. Okay? Again, you know, Matthew, and maybe he's very intentional about this too, and we kind of talked about this a little bit, but like, there's a lot of humility that's being shown here when he writes these accounts because, you know, people would have looked up to these apostles, would have looked up to these disciples. And, you know, Matthew is basically saying, hey, we did not have the right kind of faith that we needed to in some of the most pivotal and crucial moments. Sometimes our faith fell flat when it encountered pressure, okay? And maybe that provides a lot of encouragement to some folks to realize that even those that were closest to Christ, who were following with him, they made mistakes and they fell short. They also kept moving, except for Jesus, or Judas. So, you know, again, faith like a mustard seed, the smallest thing that they could have imagined. You know, it's not necessarily the size, it's just real, genuine faith. Put it in God. Depend on him. Let him control the outcome. And hopefully, and it will, those great things are gonna happen. They're going to change. And I just keep putting my faith and trust in him. Any comments about this section? I know we skipped through it pretty quickly, but I want to keep moving. Go ahead.
I mean, this is always their faith. Exactly one. It might be a picture. And there seems to there might have been an over-reliance on themselves.
Yeah, right.
Maybe not crystal clear to us, but I think that's still instructive to us to today.
Right.
It's a greater reliance on ourselves to do something than really God.
Yeah, well, you've given me something to think about, and let me know if I'm off on this. But using the tools, perhaps they knew what they needed to do. Perhaps they're familiar with what they need to do. Perhaps what's not driving all at the end of the day is the belief and conviction behind it. That I did what you said, but that's like, yeah, Jesus, I'm here on Sunday mornings. I came through the door. I sat in the pew, and my mind was way over here. My heart was focused on so many other things. Desires, I'm here, but I'm not here. So did you get credit for that today? Right? I showed up, dressed up, put my butt in the chair, but I'm not here. I get credit for that? Jesus, I did what you said you needed to do, but no, why are we here? Because of our faith, our trust, our dependence. We come to show honor and glory, show praise and glory to our Heavenly Father. We come here for each other because we realize like we need each other, want to encourage each other, want to love one another. And so I guess what I was trying to say, and I don't know if I said it well, which is like, I can go do things that have been told, but if I don't do it in the right spirit, with the right attitude, with the right conviction behind it, it's worthless. Like, that's when it starts to become to me, like, I'm just relying on myself and not God. Yeah, go ahead.
So I think I wanted to brief, and he reminded me of something, and the timing of it was fortuitous because I was able to live in Charlotte, who was struggling. And particularly what he pointed out was 23, myself, whatever you do, work heartily for the Lord and not for men. And the point I made with Charlotte, and I think for us, the context of what we're talking about right now, which is whatever we're doing, we need to do it as if Christ told us. And if we have that, do things a lot better.
Yeah, a lot better. Otherwise. Yeah, you're a lot better.
Your just greater amount of effort in it, right? I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. One last thing here. There's the second prediction that occurs. Then we get to this story of the temple tax. You know, obviously, they're asking Jesus and his disciples to pay a tax. And I mean, you know, this is the Son of God. This is God. You're asking me to pay a tax on my own temple? Like, seriously? Right? But what I really appreciate about this story is, again, the humility of the Son of God. The humility of Jesus. He's not going to put a stumbling block in front of them. He's going to say, hey, you pay the tax. Peter, go fish. Right? And then we also see, again, Christ's authority over creation and his provision. We're going to take care of this. It's not going to be a problem. Christ had every single right to say, no, we're not paying this tax. No, I'm not going to do this. But he gave up that right. He showed humility. And I just couldn't help but think about, where do we most naturally insist on our rights? What does that reveal about our priorities? You don't have to answer that right now, but I promise you, it probably won't take long today, and something will come up. Maybe there's an argument. And maybe all the women in here are going to be right about it. So maybe instead of saying, Nate, you're wrong again, it's okay. 99.9% of the time that is the case. You know, show some humility. Say, you know what? I'm willing to preserve this relationship and keep it on the right plane and not have to let my pride, my ego get in the way of saying I was right. The facts and circumstances will play out as it should. And the reality is I hope most of us are humble enough to recognize, yeah, I wasn't right about that, but man, I sure am appreciative that she didn't tell me about it either. So, a lot to think about on that question. Look, there's so many things that we could think about in what's been revealed to us through the cross. Or, I mean, through the cost that Jesus explains and what we'd be willing to give up for our souls through the transfiguration. You know, even having misaligned expectations of who Jesus is. You know, ultimately, we embrace him, but sometimes when things get difficult, be a little resistant to him. At the same time, let's not do that. Let's push past it. Humility over rights, authority and provision. Man, there's so much things to really unpack here in these two chapters. And so a lot to chew on. And then finally, I'm going to send these out for you guys tomorrow morning, but you know, just a few questions that I had included just around fear and being afraid. And there's this aspect of, showing reverence, but there's other things that potentially compete with us each week. So let's be focused on it. There are some things in my life where I am just so paralyzed. Let's jot that down and let's go to God in prayer and see where we can push through that, where we might be relying on ourselves, where we might not be experiencing the type of cost that Christ talks about. You know, someone has said it before, and it's not anything new, but reality is if we're not experiencing, you know, maybe some of the conflict and suffering and things like that that occurs, then, you know, am I really doing my life the way I should be? Am I really saying the things I should be saying? Am I really taking a stand where I need to? And that's not, let me go find a way to suffer this week. The reality is, it's like, is this really costing me something? Follow him, because Jesus said that it would, all right? Enjoy the class. We'll be finished now. Look forward to next week, and thank you all so much for your attention. All right?